On Tuesday, the 19th of February, at the Rheinberger Centre in Canberra, I presented the opening lecture on the Books of Wisdom. Unfortunately, I pressed the wrong button and it didn't record, so this is me sitting at my desk doing my best to offer again, in not as exciting a way, I imagine, but a clear statement of the first lecture. The series intends to cover the Book of Proverbs, then which was the more ancient, most ancient of the wisdom books, followed by the Wisdom of Ben Sira, a Jewish teacher close to the beginning of the 2nd century BC, and then thirdly having a look at the so-called Wisdom of Solomon, a Greek book written in Alexandria at the end of the BC or the very beginning of the AD period. This lecture actually will cover the introductory 9 chapters of the Book of Proverbs. The first thing we need to be clear about, I think, is the meaning of the word wisdom. It ranges quite widely. It really means know-how, or knowing what you're doing, knowing how to be successful in various areas. For example, if you're a farmer, a wise farmer knows how to farm well. If you're caring for flocks, similarly. If you're a parent, well, a wise parent who does the job well is someone who knows what they're doing as a parent. A woman managing a home is wise if she does it well. Then there gets the community aspect. Living in community requires a lot of know-how, and a wise member of the community is good at relating and making decisions that affect the common good and so on. Going to a more complex area, managing the state, something expected of the king or of his councillors, or diplomacy with Egypt or Babylon or other nations. A wise diplomat is someone who knows what he's doing and does it successfully. Areas of commerce and trade and so on. I think I've made my main point. Wisdom isn't just the very profound word we sometimes want it to mean. It's a general word. It covers the profound, but it also includes just knowing what you're doing when you go about it. And we'll see that in as we look at the literature. Much of the books of wisdom are made up of short, pithy sayings that have been handed down orally. We might think in English of little proverbs like stitch in time saves 9, or a bird in the hand is worth 2 in the bush, or so on. Little wise little sayings that heaven knows when they began, and they've been handed down from the ancient times and we don't know where they started. Similarly in the Bible, particularly in the book of Proverbs. Short, pithy sayings that are handed down from mother to daughter and father to son. We'll see some of those in the second part, chapter 10 and the following. In the first part of the book of Proverbs, and generally also throughout the wisdom literature, we also find not just one-liners, but expanded lessons that have been committed to writing for the purpose of teaching. This process probably began when the writing of the Bible began in the 8th century BC, possibly in the Northern Kingdom. Some of the books, the statements in the books of wisdom, we'll see some today, are borrowed from other nations, significantly from Egypt, which had a big influence, of course, on what happened in the so-called Holy Land. Sometimes the statements in the books of wisdom are influenced by Israel's religious tradition. Sometimes that's made quite explicit, but it's always there in the background. The religious awareness of Yahweh, their God, permeates some, anyhow, of the wisdom sayings. Let's begin now with the book of Proverbs. The opening verse says, it's the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. We're going to see that repeated in the second part of this lecture, chapter 110, verse 1, which talks about the wise sayings. Excuse me. The wise sayings of Solomon. These are the other, again, chapter 25. These are the other wise sayings of Solomon that the officials of King Hezekiah of Judah copied. So someone during the reign of Hezekiah, who was the first king after the destruction of the northern kingdom, added a lot of proverbs to this book. Possibly they had their origin in the north and were brought down by the refugees escaping from the Assyrians. In the book of Kings, reflecting back over this period, we find three statements about Solomon. Chapter 4, verse 32 tells us Solomon composed 3,000 proverbs, and his songs numbered 1,005. A little later in that, verse 29 of that chapter, God gave Solomon very great wisdom, discernment, and breadth of understanding as vast as the sands of the seashore. And in chapter 10, verse 23, King Solomon excelled all the kings of the earth in riches and in wisdom. So the legend David stands for the Psalms, the singing, the praising of God. Wisdom all comes under the patronage of this son of David called Solomon, who, though he didn't end well, was noted for his wisdom. We find this even in the New Testament, Matthew chapter 12, verse 42, has Jesus saying, "The Queen of the South will rise up at the judgment with this generation and condemn it, because she came from the ends of the earth to listen to the wisdom of Solomon and see something greater than Solomon is here." The opening chapters of the book of Proverbs, which is our topic for the moment, seem to have been written in the post-exilic period, that is, in the end or the beginning, the end of the 6th century or the beginning of the 5th century. And what was considered wise behaviour in earlier times was inadequate in the changed circumstances of Judah after the return from the exile. The destruction of Jerusalem and its temple, the end of the monarchy, called much of traditional wisdom into question. You will know about the book of Job, and we've also already looked in earlier times at the book of Ecclesiastes or Kohelet. Here we have two authors who were very unsure about the ancient wisdom, so-called, and question it, rightly. For traditional wisdom saw God as rewarding the good with success, for example, and punishing the rebellious. This doesn't quite add up and didn't satisfy people's questions. Prosperity and success could no longer be thought of as necessarily indicating divine blessing. We find this in some of the Psalms too, questioning this. A new understanding was required. Exilic and post-exilic wisdom literature stresses the fact that we can't comprehend God. We can't fit God into our tidy little categories. We must apply our minds as honestly as we can, but ultimately, wisdom shares in the mysterious transcendence of God. We must trust, yes, and we must also live a righteous life. Before looking at Proverbs, I'll take you to Psalm 1, the opening psalm of the psalmody, which everything in the psalm, book of Psalms, is meant to be read in the light of Psalm 1 and Psalm 2. But we'll look at Psalm 1 now, and it reads, "Happy the person who does not follow the counsel of the irreligious, or take the path that sinners tread, or sit and scoff with cynics, but whose delight is the law of Yahweh, meditating on his law day and night. They will be like a tree planted by streams of water. It yields its fruit in season, its leaves never wither. In all they do, they will prosper. Not so the irreligious. They're like chaff that the wind drives away. They won't stand at the judgment. Sinners will have no place among the righteous, for Yahweh knows the way of the righteous. But the way of the irreligious leads to destruction." So now we begin looking at this introductory material to the book of Proverbs, the ancient book of Proverbs, material which I suggest is written after the exile, creating a context for us to read the very pithy one-liners that make up most of the book of Proverbs. I want to take you firstly to chapter 1. I won't read all of it, I have to be selective. Chapter 1, verse 7 has the famous phrase, "The fear of Yahweh is the beginning of knowledge." We find that repeated in chapter 9, verse 10, and 15, verse 33. So what is this fear of Yahweh? We're going to see that it is really another way of talking about religion. Profound respect and a sense of awe in relation to the divine. Isaiah chapter 11, verse 2 to 3 reads, and you're familiar with this, I know, "The Spirit of Yahweh will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge, and the fear of Yahweh. His delight will be in the fear of Yahweh." So clearly, the fear of Yahweh is a gift, a cherished gift from God, from the Spirit of God. Psalm 111, verse 10 says, "The fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom." Psalm 112, verse 1, "Happy are those who fear Yahweh," and then they define what that means, "who greatly delight in his commands." They have such profound respect for the divine, listening, watching, attentive, that as soon as they know the will of God, they want what God wants. They delight at God's commands because that shows them the way to live. That is called the fear of Yahweh. Psalm 128, verses 1 to 4, "Happy everyone who fears Yahweh, who walks in his ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be happy. It will go well with you. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house, and your children like olive shoots around your table. Thus shall the man be blessed who fears Yahweh." And just one last. "Truly," says Job, chapter 28, verse 28, "truly the fear of Yahweh, that is wisdom. To depart from evil is understanding." So while in the ancient times particularly there would have been some fear in our sense of God, because God was thought of as controlling the world, God could ensure a loss of in a war, in a battle. God could ruin the crops. God could kill have a person die when they're young. God was the one somehow controlling everything that happened. Well, that's pretty powerful, and some people could well fear such a one and want to be on the side of Yahweh to avoid the consequences of God's so-called anger. Well, in that context, fear is a reasonable word. But there is this deeper sense, more profound sense of awe and wonder and delight in the divine, the sacred. When we get to the New Testament, we find, thanks to Jesus, a radical shift in this that hasn't always penetrated our consciousness. But let me read to you the first letter of John, chapter 4, verse 18. He says, look, there's no fear in love. Perfect love casts out fear. Fear has to do with punishment. Whoever fears has not reached perfection in love. We're going to see shortly wisdom personified as a woman. This seems to be something quite unique to Israel. We don't find it in the Mesopotamian literature, we don't find it in Egypt, but we will find it here today. A man called Dermot Cox, in his commentary on the Proverbs, writes, wisdom is a channel by which God can reach out to humanity and draw humanity to himself, led by the voice of creation and its inherent mystery. We cannot comprehend God. We cannot comprehend life. God appeals to us through wisdom to live reflective, attentive lives. In this way, we'll play our part in ordering the world for God, in building communities that will bring about the reign of God in this world. So, with that background, let me now take you through some of the texts in the first 9 chapters of the book of Proverbs. I hope you just enjoy listening. Chapter 1, verse 8 to 15 reads, hear, my child, your father's instruction. Do not reject your mother's teaching. They are a fair garland for your head and pennants for your neck. My child, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let's lie in wait for blood, let us wantonly ambush the innocent. Let Sheol, like Sheol, let us swallow them alive, whole like those who go down to the pit. We'll find all kinds of costly things. We'll share one purse. Throw in your lot with us. We'll share one purse. Oh, my child, do not walk in their way. Keep your foot from their paths, for their feet turn to evil. And later in the chapter 1, we find what I've already mentioned, wisdom is personified. It reads, wisdom cries out in the street, raises her voice in the squares. At the corner of a bustling street she calls, speaks her word at the city gate. How long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? Perhaps naive. How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? Give heed to my reproof. I will pour out my thoughts to you. I will make my words known to you. God is revealing himself through creation, through the prophets, through the Torah. God is revealing himself and his will to us to draw us into divine communion. And here is wisdom walking the streets, attracting us to listen to God's revealed word. It's easy for us as Christians to think of Jesus as the personification of wisdom, which of course he is. And the text concludes, chapter 1, verse 33, those who listen to me will be secure and will live at ease without dread of disaster. Proverbs chapter 2 has 22 lines in the poetry. Now there are 22 consonants in the alphabet of the Hebrew language, and scholars suggest that the fact that there are 22 lines is linked with that. It's meant to be a literary device to indicate completion, comprehensive nature of what's suggested in chapter 22. It's the A to Z of life. Well, the quest for wisdom is a quest for God, and we must want the wisdom that comes from God more than anything. The goal of education and its prize is communion with God, knowing God in that lovely biblical sense of knowing, knowing through intimate communion. Verse 8 of chapter 2, I'll only read some verses, says, God watches over and preserves the way of his faithful ones. Now, pardon me, but the Hebrew for faithful ones is the chassidim. You've probably heard us use the word chesed quite frequently. It's a central biblical word. The chesed of God means God's commitment, God's faithfulness to the covenant that he's made with his people. So chesed is a faithful commitment. The chassidim are those who welcome this chesed and live accordingly, those who respond to God's offer and embrace the grace of it, those who believe, those who are, as translated here, the faithful ones, the ones that are full of faith. And faith, as you know, is the word we use for the welcoming of grace. Verses 10 to 11 read, when wisdom comes into your heart, when knowledge gives delight to your soul, discretion will keep watch over you, understanding will protect you. A lot of beautiful words there. Knowledge, discretion, understanding. But the key word, of course, is wisdom. When wisdom comes into your heart. Verses 12 to 19 speak of the dangers from which wisdom preserves us. I'll let you read that for yourself. Verses 20 to 22 offers a contrast between the fates of the wise and the foolish. Proverbs chapter 3 to 4 is a mixture of exulting in wisdom and advice. Let me read for you chapter 3, verse 17 to 20. The ways of wisdom are ways of delight. All her paths are peace. She's a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called happy. Yahweh, by wisdom, founded the earth. He established by understanding the heavens. By his knowledge, the deeps broke open and the clouds dropped down the dew. Creation is seen as the place where we recognize and respond to the wonderful wisdom of God. Chapter 27 to 32 of chapter 3, verses 27 to 32 reads, "Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due, when it's in your power to do it. Do not say to your neighbor, 'Go, come again, tomorrow I will give it,' when you have it with you now. Do not plan harm against your neighbor who lives trustingly beside you. Do not quarrel with anyone without cause when no harm has been done to you. Do not envy the violent and do not choose any of their ways, for the perverse are an abomination to Yahweh. The upright are in Yahweh's confidence." A rather direct recognition that wisdom is about the way we relate to other people, the way we care for our neighbor, the way we live trustingly and peaceably with others. Chapter 4, verse 14 to 19 reads, "Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evildoers. Avoid it. Don't go near it. Turn away from it. Keep going. They cannot sleep without doing wrong. They're robbed of sleep if they have not made someone stumble. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn, which shines brighter and brighter until full day. The way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know what it is they stumble over." Continuing chapter 4, verse 20 to 27 reads, "My child, be attentive to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them slip from your eyes. Keep them within your heart, for they are life to those who find them and healing to their flesh. More than all else, you guard, watch your heart, for from it flow the springs of life." What a profound line that is. Among all the things that you guard, please watch your heart. Why? Because it is from the heart that come the springs of life. The book continues, "Put away from you all crooked speech. Put deceit far from your lips. Let your eyes look directly forward, your gaze be straight before you. Keep straight the path of your feet. All your ways will be sure. Do not swerve to the right or the left. Walk away from evil." It's interesting to look at the New Testament, which of course is written within the context of the words and ideas of the Older Testament. Of course, seen again in fresh light, in the light of Jesus. But in the book of Hebrews, chapter 12, verse 13, that last little phrase is quoted by the author when he says, "Make straight paths for your feet, so that what is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed." That's the book of Hebrews, chapter 12, verse 13. In chapter 5, 6 and 7, there's quite a lot of warning young men, because it's the young men that are in the classroom being taught from this manual. There's a lot warning men to be chaste and faithful in their love. I'll just touch on little pieces of it and leave most of it for your own reading. Chapter 5, verse 15 to 19 is talking about, well, marital fidelity, really. Under the image that I'll now share with you, it says, telling the young men, drink water from your own cistern. Brackets, your own wife, the one you're committed to in love. Drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets? Let them be for yourself alone, not for sharing with strangers. Keep your sexual energy intact. It goes on, let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. May her breasts satisfy you at all times. May you be intoxicated always by her love. Chapter 6, verses 1 to 5 offers financial advice. Chapters verses 6 to 11 advises against laziness. And verses 12 to 19 advises against pride, lying, and the causing of discord. We'll move now to chapter 8, in which once again, wisdom is personified. Verse 17 reads, wisdom is saying, I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently find me. Comment, wisdom is a quality of the heart, of our inner being. A special intimacy is promised to the wise. Ultimately, this is intimacy with God. Wisdom is offered to everyone. And we are reassured that if we diligently seek wisdom, we will not be disappointed. Verses 22 to 36, a lovely long passage. I hope you enjoy it. I'll just read it for you. Wisdom is speaking, personified woman, wisdom. Yahweh created me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts of long ago. Ages ago I was set up at the first, before the beginning of the earth. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains, no springs of water. Before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills, I was brought forth. When he had not yet made earth and fields, or the world's first clumps of earth. When he established the heavens, I was there. When he marked out the horizon on the face of the deep, when he made firm the skies above, when he established the fountains of the deep, when he assigned to the sea its limit so that the waters might not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, there I am, beside him like an artisan. I am daily his delight, rejoicing before him always, rejoicing in his inhabited world and delighting in the human race. And now, my children, listen to me. Happy those who keep my ways. Hear instruction, be wise, don't neglect it. Happy the one who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting beside my door. For whoever finds me, says wisdom, finds life and obtains favor from Yahweh. Those who pass me by injure themselves, and those who hate me love death. Chapter 9, which is the last chapter of this introductory post-exilic material, verses 1 to 6 reads, Wisdom has built herself her house. She set up her seven pillars. She has slaughtered her animals, mixed her wine, set her table. She has sent out her servant girls to call from the highest places in the town. You that are simple, come here. To those without sense she says, Come, eat of my bread, drink of the wine I have mixed. Lay aside immaturity and live and walk in the way of insight. If you're familiar with the Newer Testament, and we can hear Jesus saying, Come to me, all you that labor and are burdened. He is the incarnation of God's wisdom, appealing to us to come to him that he may fill us with the nourishment we need to live in communion with God. Eat my bread and drink my wine, says Proverbs chapter 9. Jesus, this is my flesh given for the life of the world. This is my blood poured out for you. We are nourished by the bread and the wine, the life and the life-giving of Jesus, of God, poured out for us. There's a wonderful parallels that show themselves right through the language of the New Testament, reflecting on materials such as we've just read. In chapter 9, to conclude, verses 13 to 18, folly is also personified as a woman and calls out to go in the opposite direction. And it concludes in verse 18 with the words, Her guests, that is, not the guests of wisdom, but the guests of foolishness, her guests are in the depths of Sheol.